This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
All right. Rolling with Jason and John, 929 FM ESPN. Happy Tuesday, April 2nd to you. We're all here and accounted for. I'm here. John Martin's here. Brad Carson, executive producer on the ones and twos. Also program director. We're all here. All happy to be here. Grateful to be here. It's a great night of college basketball last night. Women's college basketball. Yes, and Caitlin Clark shows us again why she's the best player in that world. My goodness. She was good against LSU, and down goes LSU and Kim Mulkey. We'll talk about the big night on the women's stage last night. It felt Final Four-ish, and yet that was just Elite Eight-ish. I think some people are still confused on that. UConn also advanced last night, meaning it'll be UConn and NC State that have both their men's and women's teams in the Final Four. That's pretty impressive. So was Jaren Jackson Jr.'s night last night. There was some language there used by Taylor Jenkins afterwards that I want to discuss. It's a little bit concerning to me.
Okay.
A little bit concerning.
I'm unaware, so I'm looking forward to hearing.
We'll talk about that. That's called a tease, right? That's called a tease, something we'll get to a little bit later. And, John, man, sad news yesterday. You saw it that Vontae Davis, former Pro Bowler, 35 years old, found dead. A brother of Vernon Davis, former Dolphin. I think he would spent some time perhaps, too, with the Colts, I believe. Just a, you know, one of those stories where you're going, what in the world? Got 35 years old, got the rest of his life in front of him. T.Y. Hilton saying he just saw him at a camp, you know, got, you know, in a good spirits and everything else. And, yeah, just a little bit of a shocker there. Vontae, do you remember how he finished his career?
Yeah, didn't he, like, just drive
retired
off?
Retired in a game.
He retired remember? In game.
Yeah. We actually, I think we talked about it. I think we did.
Yeah. Different than Antonio Brown, but, like,
Antonio walked off. But Vontae kind of walked off. It was during a game that he said, my body told me I don't need to be doing this anymore.
He retired at halftime.
At halftime.
That's yes. What it did.
Was it the Bills, I think, at that point
in
his career?
The Bills, yeah.
There it is. Really weird ending to his career. And my gosh, I mean, you know, imagine what his family's going through today. Certainly thoughts and prayers. Just one of those stories. Just, what in the world? And, yeah, police said no foul play. Still no cause of death at this point. But one of those strange stories, man, you just, you know, pop up on you and you. When you least expect.
Yeah, very sad news for the family there, the Davis family. That's really all you can say is prayers for them as they try to, you know, work through that, because that's difficult at 35, no doubt. Hey, we're going to do a show today. Jessica Benson's going to join us at 11:25. Nick Friedell's going to join us at 1:25. Obviously, heavy NBA talk with the both of them. And we're getting into that time, right? I mean, we only have 1 week left of college basketball. This is it. And then it'll be NBA playoff time, basically.
Pretty much.
You know, we have to get through the – how many games are we down to now for the Grizz?
Seven-ish.
Oh, thank God.
Look at this.
Yeah, so that'll finally be over, and it'll be on to the NBA playoffs. So, by the way, just real quick, I did watch most of that Marc Gasol documentary. It was really good. It was really, really, really good.
I expected it to be.
Like, there was really nothing that you didn't know about his time with the Grizz, but what I thought they did a really, really good job of is talking about and focusing on the before he became Marc Gasol of the Grizzly, coming here with Powell, Lausanne. They talked to his like high school teammates. They found him and he talked to some of his about who he was and the coolest.
Who they get? They get Carlos Taylor.
Yes, they got Carlos Taylor. And I think they got another guy.
Did Johnny play with him?
Yes.
Johnny West?
Yes.
Okay.
I think they talked to him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I need to check it out.
And it was just, it was great because they told a story when Mark was coming here, when he came to Memphis and he was at Lausanne, that he just wanted to, you know, basically acclimate. He wanted to assimilate into the Memphis culture. And so he would borrow Pal's Escalade and they would drive around and go into like North Memphis and Fraser and play, like pick up basketball or watch basketball games. Like it, yeah, like they, he would just talk about driving around North Memphis in Pal's Escalade.
Wait a minute, they got out at Gooch Park and played?
I don't know.
In North Memphis? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like
they would say, they said.
Pick up games in,
yes,
North Memphis and
they
Fraser?
They said Mark played.
I must watch.
They said Mark played in those games. And it was like, and he just. And that,
Mark was a kid.
Yeah, as a 15, 16 year
old. Pal's going into the hood.
Pal wasn't there.
I thought, okay, he's just taking his Escalade.
Yeah,
he's not taking
Pal's
with
truck. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But still, it's kind of a hilarious. And they said they were driving around listening to Memphis rap.
Well, I believe that.
You know, and Mark
loves Memphis rap. Yeah, I believe that part all
Mark
day
was
long.
Like, this was just, you know, this is what my friends listened to. So it's what I listen to.
Man, shout out to him.
It was really good.
Well, that helped toughen him up, too. I mean, we talk about how much Spain toughened him up once he came back.
It was really North Memphis.
It was really North Memphis.
Yeah. It was good stuff. It was really good stuff. And they talk about, I don't know how much.
You know what? Because of your review, I'll now check it out ahead of Saturday.
The only issue that I guess I would take with it, and I understand it because it's made by the Grizzlies.
Of course it is.
So it's, but they kind of gloss over the Powell trade, like, and really what was going into that. You know what I mean? Like, it got nasty there at the end of Powell.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just it wasn't like the Grizzlies were like, all right, we got to move on from Powell. It was Powell who was miserable and wanted out.
Right.
And they didn't really. That's not how they kind of presented it in the. And again, I understand why, because why would the Grizzlies say Powell was miserable? Because they talked to Powell. Powell is featured in this thing prominently.
I would hope he is.
And they do. Again, it gives you. There's actually, they have footage of Chris Wallace on the phone with the Lakers trying to, or somebody trying to get a pick or get Mark Gasol away from them, the draft rights, right? And it is just so fascinating just to go back in time and, you know, see the early days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And because that's the cool part. That's the cool part. So, anyway, we'll talk to Jessica Benson about that documentary and more at 11:25. But, like we usually start the week with, at least in the early parts of the week, we do a little thing called Cap or No Cap. Let's get it.
Cap. It means lion, but built different. Now, it's Cap.
I'm going to say Cap.
For No Cap.
I'm going to say that that's No Cap.
On 92.9's Jason and John Show.
All right. America. The United States of America, the greatest country in the world, loves its brands. Is that Cap or No Cap?
That's No Cap.
That is No Cap. That's actually just factual. This is a factual one. This is just a way for us to talk about the ratings in the NCAA tournament.
Amazing, apparently.
Yeah, which are up significantly. Now, again, you go back in time to a year ago, the Elite Eight in the NCAA tournament last year was, I mean, we had a lot of teams that, you know, FAU, San Diego State.
We discussed it. We said the tournament was missing its brands.
The only one really was UConn.
Yeah.
I don't remember who else.
You and I literally had the conversation. About brands.
But this year, the brands are back, and we're back, and it led to the most watched Elite Eight day for CBS Sports and TNT Sports in 5 years.
Wow.
Led, probably not shockingly, by a Duke game. Duke NC State, more than 15 million viewers. 15.1, that's up 34%. It's the most watched telecast on Easter on any network in 11 years. The last most watched would have been Duke Louisville in the Elite Eight in 2013. That had 15.6. Duke NC State peaked with 18.8 million.
Mm.
Sunday's games on CBS averaged 12.8 million viewers. That's up 30% from last year. Most watched Elite Eight day since 2019, as we talked about. Purdue Tennessee averaged 10.4 million viewers. That's up 25%. And it was the most watched early Elite Eight game in 5 years. So, yeah, overall tournament viewership is averaging 9.4 million viewers across TBS, CBS, TNT, True TV, up 4% from last year. So not drastic, but as you get into the later, like, that's the key, right? The difference is we like our brands in the big moments. Like, everybody's going to watch the first and second round, right? Like, so up 4% is actually kind of impressive because everybody watches the first and second round. But as you get later into the tournament, if you don't have your Dukes or Kentuckys or Carolinas or et cetera, and it's FAU or San Diego State or somebody like that, Miami, you know, people are checked out. And I think that's kind of what this says is that, you know, we like our upsets in doses at the right moments, but we don't want them too late. We don't want them too far into this thing.
Still a bit of eyebrow. I'm with it and totally subscribe to the brands of the reason we're locked in this year, obviously, but still a little bit surprised because of the sort of lack of lottery picks, star power, it feels like. And I said, you know, listen, it's not like Duke doesn't have, you know, Filipowski, he's probably going to go in the lottery and everything else, but it's not Zion type stuff. You know, you're missing those guys. Even Brandon Miller last year at Alabama just feels like there's not as much. So a little bit of a surprise, at least to me, because we discussed it, and especially in relation to the women's tournament, felt like, I mean, just look last time, each team that was on display had one major star. And so, but no, brands over individual players clearly is what's playing out. That doesn't surprise me. The numbers being this high, though, without the, you know, the American star. Again, look at the mock drafts for the NBA. You just don't have as much of it feels like. So, great news, obviously, for CBS and everybody else involved, TNT and those groups, a little bit higher than I thought it'd be.
Are you happy for the corporate suits today?
I guess. Yeah.
They needed something good to
happy
happen.
For college basketball.
Yeah.
You know?
But we're gonna get to the more college basketball in just a minute.
I figured you had some more coming.
Yeah, look. What we try to do on this show is we try to let people push their woke agendas.
Well, that's what you do.
And
you push back.
And
now.
And we'll do that. And we'll do that a little bit later. All right. Moving on. Memphis basketball is gonna get P.J. Haggerty.
Oh.
The Tulsa guard who's transferring.
Not just the guard. He's the freshman of the year in the conference.
Freshman of the year in the AAC. And, by the way, the same person who signed a Tulsa fan shirt and said, I'm staying in Tulsa.
He did that?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he's considering returning, I'm
the
sure.
The epitome of brutality.
You could always pull a Malco and go back. He's not going back.
You can't sign somebody's shirt saying, I'm staying in Tulsa, knowing damn well you was never going to stay in Tulsa.
How many did he have in that? Do you remember off the top?
Not really.
He cut them up in that first game, did he not?
I'm sure that's the only way they were in the game.
And you remember, you lost Mills in that Tulsa game, too, and that helped him,
yes,
obviously. But P.J. Haggerty was a stud, and we were saying in that first Tulsa game, my God.
He had 27. 27, 8,
went
and 4.
Off.
And he's a freshman.
Freshman.
Yeah. The only reason they were in
felt
the game.
Felt taller than 6'3". When I saw the 6'3 list, I was like, I had to go back. I thought he was 6'4", 6'5". I mean, he just plays big.
Yes.
Stud. We said it when they played the game. This would be one of those guys, man, Penny Hardaway would be talking to a little bit in that handshake line. Like to see you next year, player. Hitman Hoops had this first, I believe. So, shout out to him on the reporting mutual interest between the two. I got to imagine a lot of folks want PJ. And I'm talking Power Five and everything else.
Right.
You know, he's going to have an opportunity to get out of the American. Again, though, you know, the fact that he's already on the radar, apparently, and more so that Memphis is on his radar, seems like good news. I mean, you know, Penny hasn't missed on many of these. Once they come in for a visit, we'll see if it gets to that point or if that gets reported. Didn't miss on Bradley last year.
Yep.
You know, and that ended up with a chain reaction, a domino effect.
Costly.
When you didn't get Bradley from Alabama, the point guard that you initially wanted, what did you have to do? You had to wait.
Absolutely.
You had to wait later. You end up with Javon Quinterly. So Penny has missed on guys that we thought were close. This seems like a great target. I'm not going to lie. But, again, what have we said, John? Penny's going to get players, right? And they're going to be impressive in terms of the guys that he brings in on paper and everything else. Doing that, right, plus – having doesn't equate to successful season. We can use this year as an example. That's the key there. So getting the players is only half the battle at that point. You better hope it's the right mix of guys. PJ would be a good start, feels like to me.
Yeah, I think it's certainly unlikely for all the reasons that you just said. I mean, he's going to have his choice, you know. I mean, he would have a situation at Memphis where it is definitely like the runway is cleared for you because there's – We could say David Jones. We don't know if David Jones is coming back. We have no indication one way or the other.
Let me
on
ask
that.
You just from a philosophical question. Then a question for you: if you are PJ, is it better for you to go up, go to the Big 12 or something, go play for Houston, whatever it is, can't
right.
just pick a team.
Right.
But you're in a tougher conference.
Very much.
And so those numbers that you put up this year in the American probably going to be left. Or is it better to be that guy? Like it's like you said, if it's a Memphis or whoever clearing the runway for you in the AAC that you just rolled as a freshman, look pretty darn good in, is it better to stay where you're at? Just philosophically.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be the pitch. That would be the pitch if you're a Penny, for example.
Exactly.
That like, yeah, I mean, you can go to a Big 12 team and win. And maybe
get on a big stage in the tournament. I mean, that's you know, there's pros to that too. Now
you'll play a role. I mean, you'll go to a Big 12 team and you'll play a role, or you can come to Memphis and be the guy. You can be who the team is built around. That would be because I highly doubt that those kinds of teams would be promising a sophomore, you know, that type of role.
A little bit
role.
Different than what they can,
right.
Yeah,
it's just true. If Memphis sort of wants to do that, if they want to commit to that kind of role for him, then I think they will have a shot. But man, he's number one in the portal,
right?
You know,
right?
I mean, that's,
you pulled that off once.
It's with Kendrick. Right. It's tough, man. It's tough. I mean, I would bet against it. I would bet against it because there's going to be a lot of places trying to throw a bag at him.
He is perfect in the sense that we're talking about the kind of prospects we said in terms of this transfer portal. You want a Penny Hardaway after the multi-year guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he represents that.
Mm-hmm.
So just from that, you know, from that standpoint, makes a lot of sense for Memphis. Wonder if it makes as much for PJ, depending upon options. Like John said, he's number one in the portal. You're going to be fighting with a lot of folks for PJ.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, we will see. But there's been a communication, according to a mutual interest, according to Hitman Hoops. So that is one to monitor. All right, moving on to the Grizz. They won last night. Grizz should sit Jaren down now that he's played 65.
That is no cap. I mean, do I expect him? Would I sit him the last seven? I mean, I'd ask him, because at this point I'd be fine with it. Jaren obviously had the goal of reaching 65 games, which you do last night, and you do it with an exclamation point. Scoring 40 points in that win over Detroit last night, he was absolutely fantastic. No reason, you know, unless and clearly they've gone to some of these guys. Brandon Clark is an example. Brandon Clark wanted to play. You know, Grizzlies have been perfectly fine with him sitting the rest of this out. He apparently wanted to play. I'm fine with that. If Jaren says, look, I want to stick it out with the guys who are out there, these final seven, okay. But I'm lighting up. It's all about, you know, him staying healthy the rest of the way. You've reached the 65 required to be on these all-defensive teams, everything else. Let's shut it down for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you saw Desmond Bane not playing last night.
Right.
I mean, it's time to put Jaren in that category. You want to play a couple more out the rest of the way? Go right ahead. No reason for you to play the rest of these seven, though.
Yeah, I don't really think they're – I agree with you. What do you gain? You won last night. That's kind of unfortunate. So – What's the goal? You know, I
don't want to win no more.
Right,
that's the other part of it.
Exactly. Like I would
anymore.
You know. So what are they projected right now? Do you know?
You talking about in the draft ladder?
Yeah,
they got the seventh, and they're likely locked into that. You're not going to catch.
Okay.
Portland's way gone, and you're probably not going to catch Toronto because they have to be top six again to keep the pick. And so Toronto's lost two. What is it? 11, 12 in a row. I'm not sure. I've lost track at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They're not winning games, and so yeah, you're locked in right now. Pretty much to that seventh worst, it looks like. Because I think I can go that there's now a nice little cushion between you and the next team down, which is Brooklyn. Yeah, you got 3.5 game cushion between 7 and 8. So the likelihood is, much like I told you, likelihood is 9-10 Lakers, Golden State. Likelihood is Memphis going to have 7th.
Right.
Remember, the Pelicans, was that 4 years ago, 19?
Yeah.
Go from 7 to 1, get Zion. Grizzlies that year go from 8 to 2.
Yeah.
To get Ja Morant. So it's within the realm of possibility that you can make this jump. I wouldn't be too disappointed if that's my point, that you're finishing here looks like around 7.
So
it's, in fact, better position than you were in the year you got Ja.
So the way this breaks down is the Grizzlies have a 66.7% chance to get 7th, 8th, or 9th.
Right.
They have a, 15.3, 23.4, 31.9% chance to get, or something like that, like 30 some odd percent to get 1 through 4. So, you know, that your overwhelming odds are going to be, but that's not nothing. I mean, 34% chance ish to get in the top 4. That's not nothing. That means basically one out of every, you know, 10 times, 3.5 times, you're going to have a top four pick.
You don't have to dream up the scenario. It's literally happened here.
And if you have a top four pick in this draft, you have options. No question. Because in the top four, there are some players that people might want to trade up and get. If you end up in the seventh through ninth, you're going to have to keep the pick. I don't think anybody would – I would be surprised if anybody's still available in that range. And then you would probably just be looking at drafting Reed Sheppard at seven. I mean, I think that's probably the way you would go. And that would be a win, by the way. I mean, because like we talked about, that allows you to get off Luke
Kennard. Gives you flexibility with Luke Kennard.
And Reed's a good player. Reed's a good player. Reed can come in here and he can contribute. And he can be a part of a winning team and could maybe win you a playoff game.
Well, the likelihood is neither Kennard or Reed would be helping you in the playoffs next year. This is more about freeing up Luke, that flexibility to go help you get a big.
Well, that's true. I think Reed can help you win a playoff game.
Possibly.
At some
point. No, it'd be great if he can. Again, with Kennard, we've seen it. He's a minus defensively, and so for that point, Reed is more so. I mean, yes, it puts you on a rookie deal, replaces Kennard theoretically, right? But it also gives you that flexibility, hopefully, to add to your flexibility to be able to go get a big.
Yeah, it depends. Like, I mean, you know, would you consider a guy like is Kennard too high at 7-8-9? Would that be too high for him? I do love his high release on that jumper.
Yeah,
I mean, he does. He kind of has a Durant-esque release point, you know, and I think that will translate in the NBA. He's a hell of a shooter, so he can't guard. That's the problem. But
right.
I mean, you don't need that.
That's Luke.
That's right. I think he has a chance to be a better version of Luke because he can do a little more with the ball than Luke can. So I would have him in consideration.
Absolutely.
I don't know who else would be sort of in that range.
Well, what's
the kid from Baylor?
The issue is the bigs in that range don't really fit. Like, you're either going to get one
exactly.
super high or exactly. you go way back. You're not taking Edie at seven. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not – there's just the bigs in that range aren't very good. So that's why a lot of wings right there might make some sense.
Yeah, Dawgs Kennard is eighth right now, so he would firmly be in consideration.
He's in that range, and yeah. I think Reed Sheppard will be as well.
Yeah, so Reed Sheppard, they got seven. Dawgs Kennard. You know, the you know who's interesting is the kid from Colorado, Cody Williams. He actually shot the ball really well against Marquette in their loss, and he's, you know, he's 6'8". I think you kind of have a little Zaire PTSD with him because his production wasn't great in the Pac-12, and he's kind of built similarly, 6'8", 190, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, he did shoot 42% from three, so you know what do you have against? Yeah, he shot 50% against Marquette.
I got nothing against bringing in more shooting though.
Yeah. So they will have some options at 7-8-9, and it will be for shooting. They will draft shooting because, again, as you said, if you have to address the center position, get off Luke, and inject some youth with it's not ideal. I'd rather have a surefire solution, but more shooting is never a bad thing. So I think wherever they wind up. I think they're going to be in a good spot to actually draft somebody that can help them.
Dude, you're a contending team next year that's got a lottery pick.
Yeah.
This is a unique and situation that you can take advantage of. And, again, learn from Golden State, you know, what they did. They took Wiseman. They didn't even need him to win the championship the other year. But, more importantly, they took a guy who they didn't want to develop. They weren't interested in it. Learn from those guys because you are in a similar spot. Again, it ain't Clay Steph in terms of the championship pedigree. You've already done it. But you've got a core that you believe in as a contender, and there's an opportunity to bounce right back, take advantage of it. Again, trade the pick. You know, I'm up for that as well.
Right.
There's a lot of ways you can go here.
Yeah, no question. All right, and then finally, that was a great scene in college basketball last night.
Clearly, no cap. I mean, that just the fact you had Jason Sudeikis and celebrities there for an Elite Eight, not a Final Four game. The place was packed, clearly. Up in Albany, and you had, as we talked about yesterday, you had a star for every game, for every team, and I mean an All-American level star that included the USC UConn game, obviously. But last night there, and especially in that first half, because if you're watching it, you know, Caitlin Clark took over in the third quarter. I mean, they stretched it out. She went off. But for that first half, it was back and forth. Before Angel Reese hurts the ankle, I mean, you really had what felt like something that was, you know, winding up to be perhaps going to be a classic in terms of the way that game was going to come down. Angel gets hurt, clearly slows her down. And Caitlin, to her credit, you know, it wasn't just the shooting. It was the assist and everything else. I think she accounted for over 70% of their offense last night with points and assists. Goes over 40. Like, what are we talking about here? It was a absolute great night for college basketball. And, again, I said college basketball because it was. In this case, man, it was just as good as what we've seen from the men, especially in terms of the star power and how those stars delivered, John.
Yeah. Now, this is what I was talking about. I wanted to sort of give you the space and the room to sort of push the woke agenda. And you obliged me in that. You know,
it's a very simple question about if you like what you saw last
night. Until the women can dunk, it is just not something that I'm watching. They need to be able to dunk one-handed like the men. And until that happens, I'm not watching.
It's ridiculous. Fitzy brought it up, and I had read it from a couple of people. This did feel kind of Magic Bird-ish. But you know what's different?
Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark?
Yeah. Like white America and black America, fool. Don't laugh.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Did you see some of the stuff that's on social media?
I saw Paul Pierce say he was finally impressed with...
Oh, my God. I mean, some of it's disgusting. And that's. I was talking to my son about it this morning. Like, people have compared it to that time, and because you did kind of jump on. I think it was clear, and it's been written about, you know, from the race perspective on that, you know, Michigan State, Indiana State back in the day. And the difference is social media.
Mm-hmm.
And how that would have been, you know, how you felt about Magic or whatever, if you were on the other side, how you felt about Bird. Because let's be real, Bird would hit you back with that trash talk.
And yeah, he would.
It would be reserved to your household, right? You wouldn't be reaching out and telling Larry Bird in a social media post that he lost to, you know.
That's right.
You lost that brother. Or telling Magic he lost to his slave owner like you saw last.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Last night on some of this stuff that they were telling Angel Reese, it's out there, bro. And that is, that part of it disgusts me. Like that sports brings out the best in the competitors a lot of times, but and the worst, but we can really see the worst come out too when it comes to our viewership, our watching as fans. And there's some disgusting stuff out there. When it comes to the, yeah, we beat y'all.
Yeah.
And you can just go look. I mean, it's there for you. I wouldn't recommend you get too, you know, locked up in it because it takes away, unfortunately. And that's us.
Mm.
That's not Caitlin or Angel. That's on us.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, man, it was pretty disgusting. And, again, we are in a different time now where these people can literally go out and tag Caitlin Clark, tag Angel, and tell them, you know, this kind of put that kind of vitriol in their face.
Yeah.
That's the unfortunate part
of
social media, how it's brought us, you know, brought the world closer.
I'm sorry to hear that.
You can now reach out to these people and tell all your, you know, racist feelings.
Well, I did not know that was going on.
How?
I just didn't see it. I didn't see the comments, I guess. I don't follow the right people.
I mean, Angel was basically crying in the post-game press conference.
Listen, I didn't see that.
I mean, you know, about what she'd been through.
Right.
Death threats and other stuff. And listen, I'm sure Caitlin has gotten a ton, too. And both of them, credit to them for standing up under that mess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my gosh, to be able to focus on what you got to do, basketball, you got all that mess all over, you know, anytime you open up your social media apps, that's tough.
Yeah.
You know, they should not have to shoulder that. Yeah, that's America today, brother.
Yes, it is.
We got to be better.
No, I watched last night, and I don't need women to dunk. Okay, that was just a joke. It was cool. Yeah, I mean, it was it was two stars. It was a rematch from last year. It was, you know,
I mean, she had 9 threes.
Yeah, brother. I mean, she was pulling up from the parking lot, no question. I mean, my girl Haley Van Lith unfortunately had her career ended last night because of that defense. I honestly
that's the the woman that was chasing Kaitlyn?
Yes,
the point guard.
Young lady.
Yeah.
With the pigtails.
Yeah. She was working hard.
And failing.
Pretty much, but that's a tough assignment.
It is. But I just felt like, you know, I feel like maybe Kim had something maybe against her because she just never changed it up. She just never put anybody else. So it's like you're going to – and I think Kaitlyn torched her ass back at Louisville, too. When she was in Louisville in the Sweet 16 many years ago, she did it to her there, too. So she's been giving buckets to Van Lith for a long time.
Kaitlyn Clark, now the first player in NCAA tournament history with three career 40-point games.
Wow.
After adding that 41, 12 assist, 7 rebound performance last night. She was phenomenal.
Yeah, no question. We'll talk to Jessica Benson about it, get her thoughts on the Grizz, Marc Gasol documentary, lots more to come on the other side. Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Kelly Clarkson, Michelle Obama, Jessica Benson. Ladies and gentlemen, that's my Mount Rushmore of women.
Wow. An honor.
It's big time.
I just love women. Women, women, women.
Right.
Jessica Benson, catcher on grind. Let me introduce you, please. And then, you know,
I
want to give you your propers because I don't want the cancel culture coming for me saying you didn't introduce Jessica Benson. You introduce all your other guests. Catcher on the Jessica Benson Show with CJ Hurt on Grind City Media. Catcher on Beale Street with Starry. Joins us every Tuesday. She's here now. Hello.
Oh, hello. Thanks for pushing the women's agenda. I appreciate it.
Yes, the woke agenda. Or the women's agenda, depending on which side of the aisle you're on here. But yes, no, last night was, I will say, it does feel different. And I just sort of noticed this in myself because I had both games on last night. I was doing Field of 68 last night during the UConn-USC game, and I was like actively checking to see, you know, what was going on in the UConn-USC game. I was tuned in totally to the Iowa and LSU game, and like just admittedly, I think that's the first time where I've been that locked in, you know, to an Elite Eight games for the women's tournament. So, what do you think has contributed to the boom of women's college basketball? I don't know. It kind of seems like since COVID, really.
I think, well, one, coming out of COVID, once the discrepancies got so egregiously pointed out, and credit to, I believe it was the Oregon women's basketball team that showed like the difference in handling how the bubble experience of college basketball for the women versus the men, and being like, hey, it's probably time that we put a little more energy, a little more actual physical dollars and attention into the women's game. At the collegiate level, and it really just took off from there. But I think you have to look at the star power within it. And last night was just the perfect example. Like, from a juiced up game standpoint, lightning in a bottle with Iowa LSU. Like, so rarely do you end up getting the game that you are hoping and praying to get. Like, to get an Elite Eight opportunity where Kaitlyn Clark, who was kept from winning a championship last year because of LSU and all of the extra theatrics and relationships and just the extra stuff that was involved in that game, to be able to get that again in an Elite Eight game where Kaitlyn Clark is trying, after a year she becomes the all-time leading scorer in college basketball, period, and she has to go through this LSU team once again. Like, and what does she do? She puts up 41 points. So you have the stars in Kaitlyn, and on the other side of that, Angel Reese, and how she has, you know, established herself as one of the biggest personalities in the sport. And then, as you said, going into that second game last night, there was genuine reason not to turn your TV off because you're like, oh, I get to go watch Paige Beckers, who kind of was supposed to be Kaitlyn Clark before Kaitlyn Clark took off, and Paige Beckers has 2 years of injury that kept her off the court, and it's remarkable that she has been able to get her play back to where it is. But I found myself thinking last night, what could it have been if we had had the full run of a rivalry being established between Kaitlyn Clark and Paige Beckers? Now you get it in a semifinal game, and then you also have the Juju Watkins experience of it, where here's this freshman who looks like she's truly got next. So you have so many various reasons to be invested and just genuinely excited about watching really good basketball. If you love basketball, you were rewarded by watching two great games last night.
Absolutely beautiful thing, and I enjoyed watching it. And I'm going to tell you what, Jess, I'm amazed, really, because if you listen to, you know, Holly Rowe, and I think Lobo told the story too, Kaitlyn Clark, she's talked about it, she doesn't get nervous, but she said she was felt the burden, you know, felt the weight of the world just in terms of pressure. And then afterwards, too, you know, Angel Reese kind of breaking down when she talked about the year she's had since she won the national championship in terms of the things she's dealt with, death threats, those kinds of things. And it got me to thinking, you know, the burden of stardom for those two. It doesn't feel as heavy in the men's games for those stars. I mean, I know they get stuff too, but for those two, and as great as the spotlight was, I know it's brought other stuff, and they've had to sort of bear the weight on it. And to be able to deliver like the two of them did under that weight, I just found amazing. But it feels like there is a major difference in what they deal with, Jess.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that's a really good point, and it's almost like this burden of progress that gets put on the main faces that continue to elevate this sport. And I think it was, shout out to the ESPN studio crew, because I really thought they were tremendous with Elle Duncan and Andrea Carter and Shanae Aguimike throughout this tournament. But they did the lead-in into the Iowa-LSU game last night, and I think Elle Duncan said something along the lines of, like, everything that they've fought through to get to this point, like, this is for all of the women who have gone through it. And when you think of the extras that women have had to deal with misogyny and sexism, and there's a heavy amount of racism in the sport of women's basketball as well, that you see, just, it's not like it doesn't exist on the men's side, but it just feels as if there's a brighter spotlight and more of an intensity and like just kind of a veracity to it that feels really gross. And like, so what they've had to go through and still go out and put on a show, because that's the other thing with stardom and with like true star players. Like, they didn't shy away from the moment. Like, yesterday could have happened, and all four of those women that I mentioned could have shrunken or had an off night, and they didn't. Yep. And that's what's such a testament to where they are and, like, the health of the game, thanks to players like them.
Yeah, we're talking to Jessica Benson. Joins us every single Tuesday here on the show. It is definitely a cool thing. There's always more room for good basketball, so that is definitely a welcome addition. It's been happening for a long time, but everybody's catching up. So, good stuff all around. All right, we were talking earlier about the Marc Gasol documentary. I got a chance to watch most of it over the weekend. What was, like, the most fascinating part? Was there anything you didn't know that you learned from watching that documentary?
It's interesting because I got here to Memphis in 2016. So I had the final, you know, playoff run of the Core Four and the series with the Spurs. And then I had to enter into the period of, you know, Marc Gasol and Mike Conley eventually wrapping up their careers here in the years of 19-game losing streaks. And that version of Marc Gasol, who I thought it was funny and just, like, sweet that he kind of apologized within the documentary of, you know, I probably didn't always handle things the best of ways, but also understanding where you get to that point and the feeling of camaraderie that existed within the Core Four, and once that was broken, where that led to just, you know, attitudes and a general understanding of the business side of basketball that we talk about so often. But I always knew that Marc Gasol was just an interesting person, and we talk about this all the time. Like, players are more than just basketball players running up and down the court. They're complex people just like the rest of us. And so to see the documentation of both his work with St. Jude and the children's hospitals here, but the fact that he went out and did that open air experience and trying to save lives and rescue migrants in the middle of the Mediterranean and did just that. And hearing from that woman, it was amazing that they found that woman whose life that he saved. And then to hear her account of it from a standpoint of, there was just this big man and he radiated love and empathy. And like, she felt that. She didn't necessarily know who Marc Gasol was, but in that moment, it was someone who saved her life and was just trying to do the right thing. And I think that's such a beautiful story to tell and speaks to the character of Marc Gasol. And, you know, you look at the entirety of the Gasol family and what they've been all about. And I just thought it was a really nice reminder that, yes, his legacy is as one of the best big men to ever do it. And he was right here in Memphis. And sure, he doesn't win a championship here, but God, he really, really wanted one here. And to hear him reflect on that was cool. But more than that, just like what he's done for the world. And that's a beautiful testament to the imprint that he will leave on not just Memphis, but beyond.
Well said. Feels like Brandon Clark's going to be doing a lot for the Memphis Grizzlies next year, especially because, I mean,
thought you were going to say this season as we see who we get back the rest of the way.
Holding off on that, but I will say last night, I know Jaren is the A there, had the 40 points, but Brandon Clark looked back. I mean, 7 of 12. I know we said it that very first game. Looked a lot like Brandon Clark. Last night felt like classic Brandon Clark.
Yeah, and like just a shade off the bounce maybe, but this is where these games are so important for him, because he can now go into the offseason fully understanding, like, hey, I was out there for one, two, three, however many games he ends up playing, but like, I've gone up and I've blocked shots. I've gone up and figured out how to adjust my body in the yep. air and lay it in, and then come down in a way that isn't going to impact my leg in any way that different than what it would have been pre-injury. And that's just so important for the mental rep, so that he can just get back to work in this off season. So I think that's been, you know, the best thing to look. I think he's looked maybe just even a smidge more ahead of schedule than I expected, but I'm a nervous wreck now when it comes to watching people come back from Achilles injuries, so understandable that I might have a little bit more of a queasiness. But thus far in these three games, like, it's just been exactly what I think you would have hoped to have seen from Brandon Clark, and that's a great thing for the Grizzlies going forward.
What about on the men's side here? Are you here for Zach Edey and his, people are like calling him a villain. He's not really a villain. He just kind of, I think, had some things to say after a very frustrating career in terms of not getting probably where he wanted to be in the tournament. And now that he's there, I'm with Jason. I mean, I've come around, and maybe like it's part of his development too. Like, he feels like he's come around in terms of, you know, taking a step as a player. Do you have an active rooting interest in this Final Four?
You know, I think the Zach Edey piece of it is so interesting, because he's such a good college basketball player. Like, I wish that we could just sit in the space where we talk about him and accept him as a true college basketball legend. Like, getting 40 points, 16 rebounds of that very big block on Dalton Connect, and you're going up against, you know, another one of the best players in college basketball this year, and you come out the victor, and you're out there dropping F-bombs in your post-game and managing to cut down the ladder or cut down nets without even stepping foot on the ladder. Like, that's so great. And so going into this Final Four, sure, it is funny that Purdue still does have the chance to lose to a double-digit seed, and I think it's just great that they're back in the Final Four, but the absurdity of if they were to lose to NC State and the narratives and just the jokes that would pop off. But I do really want to see Purdue-UConn in the national championship game. Like, I have fallen in love with DJ Burns and the NC State story. I think Alabama's fun and can make a bunch of threes. But ultimately, if you get a national championship game matching up Edey and Donovan Klingon, like, for me, that's the basketball that I want to ingest next, a week from Monday when they're in Phoenix/Glendale. Like, that would be the matchup that I would most be excited for.
Just who we hiring at USC men's basketball. Who we want?
I saw some talks of Musselman.
That's the word.
Do we want that?
Do you like it?
I don't not like it. I just know that from a standpoint of Andy Enfield, like, that time was done. And there was a growing, we talk so much about in sports, like, the worst thing than being like angry from a fan base is just being agnostic yep. and not caring anymore. And Andy Enfield had reached that point in his career in Los Angeles. And so, sayonara, see you with SMU. Enjoy that ACC life. But for USC, I mean, the men's team has to make a big hire, because right now there is so much energy around the women's basketball team at USC, and, you know, not to take it back to the women's game constantly, but it was crazy last night. Like, my USC group chat that has never talked about women's basketball before ever. It's primarily football, occasionally a drop of men's basketball along the way. But they were all invested in, you know, USC women have the number one recruiting class coming up. And so the men's side has to figure out a way where they are also going into this Big Ten experience with a head coach that adds some juice behind it. So at least Eric Musselman is a name. And I think that's step one for USC, is getting someone with that recognition behind them.
When Tennessee lost to Purdue, it was a really fun afternoon. Like, it just made me happy. You know,
it was such a beautiful day.
I know. I don't mind admitting that.
You know
what I'm saying? Like, I take pleasure in Tennessee's pain. I mean, I'm man enough to admit that. Is there a school for you as a USC alum, like, that you feel the same about? I mean, at UCLA, they're not relevant, right? So is there?
I know. It's funny. We were just having this conversation last night, because with USC's loss to UConn last night, that's the end of Pac-12 basketball, right? Because, like, Arizona doesn't get it done on the men's side. And so this is RIP, the end, pour one out for the Conference of Champions. But I was just talking about you know, the future of the Big Ten and how Oregon feels like they always have the Nike money behind them, so they feel well-equipped to handle whatever transition, what it means for Washington and the coaching change and the athletic director change that they've been going through, and then USC, how can they fight through? And then I was like, oh, and then there's UCLA. Like, no, at least they'll have a harder time than the rest of them. They can be the new Nebraska of the Big Ten, and I hope I don't eat those words someday. But, yeah, my whole allegiance situation has changed. Like, even this March Madness was so bizarre for me because I found myself rooting for a team like New Mexico. And I grew up in a position where, because of when my dad was the commissioner of the Western Athletic Conference, the WAC, and the WAC broke off into the Mountain West, like, I was very anti-Mountain West. I'm probably one of the one, I don't know if there's others out there, but who collectively rooted against the Mountain West Conference for a long period of time just because it was like a family grudge. But I've even come around on that. There's no room for hate in my life. So we evolve.
I got a lot of room.
I know.
Get it out.
That's okay.
Get it out of your heart.
I got a lot of room for hate in my life, and I'm going to continue to do it.
And you're going to tell it all to the Tennessee Volunteers.
Yeah. You ain't never lied.
Jess, real quick, school me on. You mentioned Pac-12. I saw where the Colorado Buffaloes game, they're obviously going the spring game. They're going Big 12. I know all that. But the spring game is going to be on the Pac-12 network. What becomes of that network? I hadn't read up. Does that fizzle out afterwards? Does it keep? What happens to the Pac-12 network that will have spring Colorado game on it?
Weird. Will you be able to see it? Who knows? That's been the existence of the Pac-12 network. Weird. I don't know the answer to that. I have watched, and I have some friends who are production assistants of the Pac-12 network, and so I've seen kind of like their swan song of the end and going through the goodbye tour, the farewell tour of it all. So my assumption, and you should never assume, but my assumption would be that it goes away. And it looks like the people who have worked there for such a long time, like I've followed a woman named Ashley Adamson, who's been kind of the main host of the Pac-12 network since its inception. And it feels very much like she has been saying goodbye in her own way. So that's where the little things behind the scenes, that's so sad, right? Like
it
that's
is.
Just such a casualty is the perfect word for it. Like, okay, here's all this conference realignment. The Pac-12 is dying. We get our jokes off, but the schools find some homes except for, you know, Oregon State and Washington State and what that means for them. But when you think about all the people who worked at the conference that's office, true. The people who relocated, the people who have given their existence to the Pac-12 network, like that's a lot of jobs that just evaporated because of the changing landscape of college sports. So that kind of stinks.
No doubt.
Jessica, thanks for the time as always.
Thank you, Jess.
Congratulations. Oh, and thank you. And thank you for being a woman.
Thank you for appreciating women.
I have nothing but women in my house. Nothing but I have no choice. Okay, I have no choice. We did balance out the ratio a little bit with Dominic. So
that's you're at good. A 50-50 split.
Well, mother-in-law tips the scales. You know, does she ever? All right,
majority rule.
Yeah, does she ever? Thanks.
Thank you, Jess.
See you guys. Yep. Bye. Yep.
Yeah, Jessica Benson joins us every Tuesday here on the show.
You know we're gonna have Lil Wayne after the game.
Louise?
Yeah, he's gonna be after our spring game, Colorado spring game.
Oh yeah,
Lil Wayne's.
Who we got for Memphis?
Who you got?
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
We got
having a little fun, it's still. You know, we went 4-8 last year, as you continue to point out. After
after starting 4-0.
Right. We're still hot.
Oh,
when you got
hottest
Wayne coming in,
yeah.
Guess who's going to be grad assistant?
Juvenile.
No, I'll tell you in the rundown.
Oh, you guys, we got some hiring news. I just heard who we're going to have at Memphis. We're going to have Lucero.
Memphis lost Esposito. Do you know that? Giannotto wrote about that. Do you know?
He went to
Michigan because the Michigan coach had a DUI.
I can't believe
we already lost him.
I can't believe he would abandon us for a crappy school like Michigan. He's not welcome here.
This is supposed to be his dream job.
He's not. That's what he said. That's what he said. From a dream to a nightmare, this has become. We lost our co-defensive coordinator.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Lou Esposito or Joe Esposito, one of the two.
Not Joe, fool.
Okay, not Joe.
Pretty sure it was Lou.
I think we should just, former Tiger. Well, I'll be honest. We didn't need co-defensive coordinators anyway. We don't need two to do the same job. We're trying to save some money around here. So that actually helped us shed some salary. We need more money for NIL for basketball. So take his salary and put it. You want to trigger Memphis fans? That's what you tell them. Take SBC's salary and put it in the NIL.
And I was just trying to trigger John. Colorado's not my team. I will.
All right, dude. I mean, Colorado was ass.
Bro, he won four games the first year there. They were trash. That's still a good accomplishment out there.
He won none after September, right? He was winless after September?
Because he had to face the real teams on his schedule.
Right. I'm glad y'all acknowledge that, because once he started playing the real team.
You ain't supposed to beat them in year one with no offensive line?
All right, well, he got his offensive line. Y'all let me know.
Is Shedeur Sanders good or not?
Yep.
Is he going to be number one pick or in play for it?
Oh, yeah.
Probably. All right, then.
If his daddy allows it.
Is Travis Hunter a real deal?
Yep.
He ain't related.
No, he's
still
not
out there.
But let me ask you
Didn't
this.
Transfer.
Let me ask you this. Has he gotten his players yet? I want to know whether or not it's fair to judge him next year or not.
Yes.
Okay, so we can judge him next year?
Heck yeah. Right. Did you judge Penny year one? He had half a tubby?
No.
Of course not. But you judged Deion.
Yep.
Judged him to death.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because Penny didn't have the players.
Keep that energy, bro.
Dude, Penny didn't have the players. Back. He didn't have Shedeur. He didn't have Travis Hunter. He didn't have those guys, you know?
That's on him. That's what he brought in there.
I'm just saying, bro. I mean, unfortunately, Penny's son is not the equivalent of Shedeur. If he was, I would say maybe it's time to judge him a little bit.
A-Lo was his son.
Yeah, and none of his sons were Shedeur in terms of ability. All right? It's just the truth.
Mm-mm.
It happens. We have to acknowledge that.
Double standard with you. It's been pointed out again.
But look, are we going to replace Lou, or are we not going to replace Lou?
I don't know. I mean, he had other duties besides. Did he have another title with co-defensive coordinator or not?
Hey, everyone. Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us, and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.